Bard Brawlers to the Bard Brawl. It is lovely, it is sunny in Montreal, and there is no better city in the world. Go ahead. Try it. Try me. I'll show you a video I took in Parc Lafontaine today, and it'll prove you wrong.
Greatest city ever. Did it feature any crying Habs fans?
No. It featured a juggler, a tightrope walker, and some Franco country folk band with a banjo and a stand-up bass.
Sounds like Montreal.
So. Zarathustra must have been... close by.
Many squirrels. Well, I don't know about that, but many squirrels. And what are those? Pedonk?
The pedonk, yeah.
Anyway. Eric Jean bearded, well, at least in spirit, growing his playoff beard right before game two. Not the best game one against the Rangers of New York.
I predict a victory tonight. I will
Me
be bold.
Too. Absolutely.
By the time victory. This podcast goes up, we will know whether I was right or wrong.
All right. So, victory for the Habs tonight. Joining us for the first time in a full podcast, writer, educator, / guitar player, Nikki Lambros. How goes it?
Excellent. So happy to be here on this beautiful afternoon on your terrace. Adjunct. Hey. Getting in the mood.
And Bard Brawl Studio, Alpha Studio. And a little bit under the weather.
Oh.
But over the moon with loveliness. Stephanie E.M. Coleman.
As usual. That was very poetic.
Yeah. Sweet. So, Bard Brawl going pound for pound with Shakespeare, much like the albino and gray-pelted squirrels in Parc Lafontaine.
Indeed.
This is our 1, 2, 3, what are we, 9th play? 10th
ninth
play?
9th or 10th? 10th, yeah. It might be 10th. We might need a special... kind of announcement.
I think that was special enough. That's really nice. Eric, we have not done, and yet, this is only the second time we've done a history.
That's
we have
true.
Not done a lot of these. Why?
They scare the brawlers.
Yeah, they do scare them away.
They're scary because everyone, because they can be confusing, because they deal with history that would have been fairly well known by Elizabethans, but that isn't known to us. So a lot of it seems confusing because we don't know who the characters are, but this would have been a lot less confusing for people watching this in the 16th century. So
many Richards and Henrys. It's like,
yeah.
Ugh, what?
Well, there's two Richards and five Henrys, although the Henrys are all, there's three, whatever. We did Henry the Sixth Part 1, which you can go on bardbrawl.com and listen to, and... watch the BBC production. The
drinking game is the death toll.
Yeah. Drink every time someone dies and you'll be plastered by one scene. Henry, Richard II is a later history and the first of a quadrilogy? What do you call it for? Quadrology?
Yeah. Tetralogy?
Which goes Richard II, Henry IV, Part 1 and 2, then Henry V. It's later, it's... technically a little better than the first quadrology.
Wouldn't it be tessology? Like, kind of go to the Greek at that point?
No, it's like, I think you go Latin.
No? Really?
Classic Greeks.
Right, as you wish.
I think you Greeks are tetralogy.
It's later. Where is this?
Well, yeah. Trinity is Greek. Yeah.
Where is Richard II in the canon?
It's a little before middle of Shakespeare's career. He wrote his second batch of history plays before he gets involved in the Romeo and Juliet's, the Merchants of Venice, and sort of goes on with that strain. So this is like the beginning of his, you know, take two. It's his New Hope.
All right. Oh, wow. Nice Star Wars. So if you're playing at Star Wars...
in terms of quality, but it's his prequel in terms of the actual subject matter.
Right. So this is the Phantom Menace...
yeah,
trilogy,
but it's New Hope quality.
But New Hope quality, right? There you go.
Yeah,
easy enough. Ask Sean Malley to fill in all other blanks on that front. So let's jump in. We are in Act One, Scene One. We are in London. King Richard comes before the War of the Roses. This is sort of the...
It's these are the events that lead up to it. Because at this point, Richard II is a York king. And Bolingbroke, who's going to come and usurp his throne...
Henry IV
is a Lancastrian. And so this sort of sets the scene for it. As the whole War of the Roses are the York king saying, hey, we deserve to be sitting on the throne, and this guy took our spot.
Because they are cousins.
Yeah.
David Starkey has a good history of this era, if you ever want to watch it. It's called Monarchy.
Technically, Bolingbroke, he comes in and he usurps, but he is actually related to the line of kings. It's just that Richard II, having no children, appointed Mowbray to be his successor. And people disagreed with that and put Bolingbroke on the throne.
So let's see how that happens. We're in London. We're in King Richard's palace. Eric Jean, would you like to be King Richard II?
I will.
King Richard I is King Richard the Lionheart, right?
Yes. Oui.
Who was in Robin
Hood. Coeur de Lion.
And is King John.
King John also.
Because Richard's gone.
That's the bastard's
John
father.
John is after Richard.
Yes, but he talks about it, and she's right, the bastard is Richard I's son.
Huh.
Yeah.
There you go. We have John of Gaunt, which will be read by Nikki Lambros. Bolingbroke, I will take Bolingbroke. Soon to be Henry IV, with blood on his hands. You'll see why, listeners. Mowbray. Stephanie, would you like to be Mowbray?
Norfolk.
Norfolk doesn't say anything.
Sure.
No one needs
no,
to.
No, what do you mean?
Oh, Mowbray's, Mowbray's the Duke of Norfolk.
He's the Duke of Norfolk.
Yes. One of the reasons people don't like the histories, because their names change.
That's true, but Duke of Norfolk, let's not forget, now that we're coming up into the age of Wolf Hall, Duke of Norfolk will be a very important person in the court of King Henry VIII.
Yes.
So the Dukes of Norfolk are extremely important, and also the first... to the throne in the north.
Also
for these kings
by
and very important dukes.
There you go.
Yep.
But in this play,
important dukes.
It's Mowbray.
It's Mowbray. Enter King Richard, John of Gaunt, with other nobles and attendants in Richard's palace.
Old John of Gaunt, time-honored Lancaster, hast thou, according to thy oath and ban, brought hither Henry Hereford, thy bold son, here to make good the boisterous late appeal, which then our leisure would not let us hear, against the Duke of Norfolk, Thomas Mowbray.
I have, my liege.
Tell me, moreover, hast thou sounded him if he appeal the Duke on ancient malice, or worthily, as a good subject should, on some known ground of treachery in him?
As near as I could sift him on that argument, on some apparent danger seen in him, aimed at your highness, no inveterate malice.
Then call them to our presence, face to face, and frowning brow to brow, ourselves will hear the accuser and the accused speak freely. High-stomached are they both, and full of ire and rage, deaf as the sea, hasty as fire.
Enter Bolingbroke and Mowbray with attendants. Many years of happy days befall, my gracious sovereign, my most loving liege.
Each day still better others' happiness until the heaps, envying earth's good hap, add an immortal title to your crown.
We thank you both, yet one but flatters us, as well appeareth by the cause you come, namely to appeal each other of high treason. Cousin of Hereford, what dost thou object against the Duke of Norfolk, Thomas Mowbray?
First, heaven be the record to my speech and the devotion of a subject's love. Just first. Tendering the precious safety of my prince, and free from other misbegotten hate, come I appeal into this princely presence. Now, Thomas Mowbray, do I turn to thee, and mark my greeting well, for what I speak my body shall make good upon this earth, or my divine soul answer it in heaven. Thou art a traitor and a miscreant, too good to be so, and too bad to live, since the more fair and crystal is the sky, the uglier seem the clouds that in it fly. Once more, the more to aggravate the note, with a foul traitor's name stuff I thy throat, and wish, so please my sovereign, ere I move, what my tongue speaks, my right drawn sword may prove.
Shing.
Let not my cold weirds hurt, accuse my zeal. 'Tis not the trial of a woman's war. The bitter clamor of two eager tongues can arbitrate this cause betwixt us twain. The blood is hot that must be cooled for this. Yet can I not of some of such tame patience boast as to be hushed and not at all to say? First, the fair reverence of your highness curbs me from giving reins and spurs to my free speech, which else would post until it had returned these terms of reason doubled down his throat. Setting aside his high blood's royalty, and let him be no kinsman to my liege, I do defy him, and I spit at him, call him a slanderous coward and a villain, which to maintain I would allow him odds and meet him, were I tied to run afoot even to the frozen ridges of the Alps, or any other ground inhabitable wherever Englishman durst set his foot. Meantime, let this defend my loyalty. By all my hopes, most falsely doth he die.
Pale trembling lie. Coward, there I throw my gage, disclaiming here the kindred of the king, and lay aside my high blood's royalty, which fear, not reverence, makes thee too exempt. Except, if guilty dread have left thee so much strength as to take up mine honor's pawn, then stoop. By that, and all the rights of knighthood else, will I make good against thee, arm to arm, what I have spoke, or thou canst worse devise.
I take it up, and by that sword I swear, which gently laid my knighthood on my shoulder, I'll answer thee in any fair degree, or chivalrous design of knightly trial. And when I mount, alive may I not light if I be a traitor or unjustly fight.
What dost our cousin lay to Mowbray's charge? It must be great that can inherit us so much of the thought of ill in him.
Look what I speak, my life shall prove it true, that Mowbray hath received 8,000 nobles in name of lending for your highness's soldiers, the which he hath detained for lewd employments. Ooh. Like a false traitor and injurious villain. Besides, I say, and will in battle prove, or here or elsewhere to the furthest verge, that ever was surveyed by English eye, that all the treasons for these 18 years, complotted and contrived in this land, fetch from false Mowbray their first head and spring. Further, I say, and further will maintain, that he did plot the Duke of Gloucester's death, suggest his soon-believing adversaries, and consequently, like a traitor coward, sluiced out his innocent soul through streams of blood, with which blood like sacrificing Abel's cries, even from the tongueless caverns of the earth, to me for justice and rough chastisement, and by the glorious worth of my descent, this arm shall do it, or this life be spent.
How high a pitch his resolution scores. Thomas of Norfolk, what say thou to this?
Oh, let my sovereign turn away his face, and bid his ears a little while be deaf, till I have told the slander of his blood how God and good men hate so foul a liar.
Mowbray, impartial are our eyes and ears. Were he my brother, nay, my kingdom's heir, and he is but my father's brother's son, now by my scepter's awe I make a vow. Such neighbor nearness to our sacred blood should nothing privilege him, nor particularize the unstooping firmness of my upright soul. He is our subject, Mowbray. So art thou. Free speech and fearless I to thee allow.
Then, Bolingbroke, as low as to thy heart, through the false passage of thy throat thou liest. 3 parts of that receipt I had for Calais dispersed I duly to his highness's soldiers. The other part reserved I by consent, for that my sovereign liege was in my debt upon remainder of a dear account since last I went to France to fetch his queen. Now swallow down that lie. For Gloucester's death I slew him not, but, to my own disgrace, neglected my sworn duty in that case. For you, my noble lord of Lancaster, the honorable father to my foe, once did I lay an ambush for your life, a trespass that doth vex my grieved soul. But ere I last received the sacrament, I did confess it, and exactly begged your grace's pardon, and I hope I had it. This is my fault. As for the rest appealed, it issues from the rancor of a villain, a recreant and most degenerate traitor, which in myself I boldly will defend and interchangeably hurl down my gage upon this overweening traitor's foot, to prove myself a loyal gentleman, even in the best blood chambered in his bosom. In haste whereof, most heartily I pray, your highness to assign our trial today.
Wrath-kindled gentlemen, be ruled by me. Let's purge this collar without letting blood. This we prescribe, though no physician. Deep malice makes too deep incision. Forget, forgive, conclude, and be agreed. Our doctors say this is no month to bleed. Good uncle, let this end where it begun. We'll calm the Duke of Norfolk, you, your son.
What, Harry again? When obedience bids, I should not bid again.
Norfolk throw down, we bid, there is no boot.
Myself I throw dread sovereign at thy foot. My life thou shalt command, but not my shame. The one my duty owes, but my fair name, despite of death that lives upon my grave, to dark dishonor's use thou shalt not have. I am disgraced, impeached, and baffled here, pierced to the soul with slander's venomed spear, the which no balm can cure but his heart-blood which breathed his poison.
Rage must be withstood. Give me his gage. Lions make leopards tame.
Yea, but not
that's
change
not
his
really
spots.
True. Lions and don't make leopards tame.
Read any bestiary written, you'll see it's true, Daniel.
So if you put a lion with a leopard, it's tame.
The lion, the leopard is a noble, and it will recognize the king, the lion, the
there
king of
go.
The beasts.
Oh, oh I see. Yeah.
No arguing there.
Okay, yep. Proven.
Read your leopard by...
Yea, but not change his spots. Take but my shame, and I resign my gage. My dear, dear lord, the purest treasure mortal times afford is spotless reputation. That away, men are but gilded loam or painted clay. A jewel in a 10 times barred up chest is a bold spirit in a loyal breast. Mine honor is my life. Both grow in one. Take honor from me, and my life is done. Then, dear my liege, mine honor let me try, in that I live, and for that will I die.
Cousin, throw up your gage. Do you begin?
Oh God, defend my soul from such deep sin. Shall I seem crestfallen in my father's sight, or with pale beggar fear impeach my height before this out-dared dastard? Ere my tongue shall wound my honor with such feeble wrong, or sound so base a parley, my teeth shall tear the slavish motive of recanting fear, and spit it bleeding in his high disgrace, where shame doth harbor, even in Mowbray's face.
Exit Gaunt. We were not born to sue, but to command, which since we cannot do to make you friends, be ready, as your lives shall answer it, at Coventry, upon St. Lambert's Day. There shall your swords and lances arbitrate the swelling difference of your settled hate. Since we cannot atone you, we shall see justice design the victor's chivalry. Lord Marshal, command our officers at arm. Be ready to direct those home alarms.
So what is Mowbray's excuse? Bullingbrook says he's misusing men.
He says that the king gave him money that was supposed to be used to levy troops. And Mowbray says, no, I used 2/3 of that money to do what the king asked me to, but I also lent the king some money, and so I kept part of this as repayment for the debt the king owed me, and that's the disagreement.
Okay.
So it's in no way corruption, Annie.
Well, if you buy Mowbray's excuse. The fact is you kind of get the sense that they're both kind of full of it.
Well, but, you know, the guy had a lot of money in his fist, and, you know, he took a lot of it and spent it for the right thing, and then the rest he put in his pocket.
Fun.
As you do when you're a noble.
Sounds like Quebec.
Does sound like Quebec. You lent me $3,000. I used $1,000 for what I wasn't supposed to, but 2/3 of it I used.
2/3
for...
of it was totally used correctly.
And what do you care about the other third? Act 1, Scene 2, we're in the Duke of Lancaster's palace, John of Gaunt. Eric, do you want to pull Duchess of Gloucester? She
sounds
has
good.
One scene here in this act.
She doesn't come up too often.
Enter John of Gaunt with the Duchess of Gloucester.
Alas, the part I had in Woodstock's blood doth more solicit me than your exclaims to stir against the butchers of this life. But since correction lieth in these hands which made the fault that we cannot correct, put we our quarrel to the will of heaven, who, when they see the hours ripe on earth, will rain hot vengeance on offenders' heads.
Oh, yeah, they accuse Mowbray of killing Gloucester. That was another thing. Anyway.
And one thing, John of Gaunt is Bullingbrook's father.
And the protector
Richard's
of Richard II, yes.
He's Richard's uncle.
He's also been the protector of Richard since
Henry
he was a boy.
Oh,
he's going to be
I
Henry
totally
IV. But yeah, the story right now is that, well, we'll see after the duel what happens, but he basically gets exiled and comes back for his lands, and then they kind of say, why don't you become king? So it kind of gets, yeah.
They're all related.
Exactly. All right, Duchess. Finds brotherhood in thee no sharper spur? Hath love in thy old blood no living fire? Edward's 7 sons, whereof thyself are one, were as 7 vials of his sacred blood, or 7 fair branches springing from one root. Some of those 7 are dried by nature's course, some of those branches by the destiny's cut. But Thomas, my dear lord, my life, my Gloucester, one vial full of Edward's sacred blood, once flourishing branch of his most royal root, is cracked, and all the precious liquor spilt is hacked down, and his summer leaves are faded by envy's hand and murder's bloody axe. Ah, Gaunt, his blood was thine, that bed, that wound, that metal, that self-mould that fashioned thee made him a man. And though thou livest and breathest, thou art, yet art thou slain in him. Thou dost consent in some large measure to thy father's death, in that thou seest thy wretched brother die, who can the model of thy father's life. Call it not patience, Gaunt, it is despair. In suffering thus thy brother to be slaughtered, thou showest the naked pathway to thy life, teaching stern murder how to butcher thee. That which in mean men we entitle patience is pale, cold cowardice in noble breasts. What shall I say? To safeguard thine own life, the best way is to venge my Gloucester's death.
God's is the quarrel. For God's substitute, his deputy anointed in his sight, hath caused his death. If wrongfully, hath let heaven revenge, for I may never lift an angry arm against his minister.
Where then, alas, may I complain myself?
To God, the widow's champion in defense.
Why, then I will. Farewell, old Gaunt, thou goest to Coventry, where to behold our cousin Hereford and fell Mowbray fight. Now sit my husband's wrongs on Hereford's spear, that I may enter butcher Mowbray's breast. Or if misfortune miss the first career, may Mowbray sin so heavy in his bosom that they may break his foaming courser's back, and throw the rider headlong in the lists, the caitiff recreant to my cousin Hereford. Farewell, old Gaunt, thy sometimes brother's wife with her companion grief must end her life.
Sister, farewell. I must to Coventry, and much good stay with thee as go with me.
Yet one word more. Grief boundeth where it falls, not with the empty hollowness, but wait. I take my leave before I have begun, for sorrow ends not when it seemeth done. Commend me to thy brother, Edmund York. Ah, lo, this is all. Nay, yet depart not so. Though this be all, do not so quickly go. I shall remember more. Bid him, with all good speed at Plashy visit me. Lack, what shall good old York there see, but empty lodgings and unfurnished walls, and peopled offices and trodden stones, and what hear there for welcome but my groans? Therefore commend me, let him not come there to seek out sorrow that dwells everywhere. Desolate, desolate, will I hence and die, the last leave of thee taken takes my weeping eye.
Exhumed. So she is the wife of Gloucester, who was murdered.
She was killed.
So she is sister of John of Gaunt, who is brother to the former king. So
she's sister-in-law, I think.
Sister-in-law of...
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway. We're at Coventry, the lists. What is the lists?
It's the place where people do joust.
Joust, yes.
Jousty time.
Right, jousting. Yeah.
So you Game of Thrones fans will know what jousting is. And the guy... Through the jouster was coming at this one character, and he picked up a like side knife sort of thing, and he threw it at the horse and stabbed him in the eye.
Wicked, very sporting.
Game of Thrones,
very fair.
HBO's. That's an episode to catch up on, by the way. Enter. Oh, sorry, we have Lord Marshall, in Amurula. Who are both in this? I'll take Lord Marshall. If you want to take,
they're all there.
They're all here. He's in the end.
If you want, I'll take Lord Marshall. If you want to take a Merle there, Nikki.
Sure.
And then we've got the normal Bolingbroke, Mowbray, Gaunt we've got, and then 2 heralds, so that should be good. Some of us will jump on the
herald.
Enter Lord Marshall and the Duke of O'Malley.
Very good.
My Lord Amer. Is Harry Henford armed?
Yea, at all points. Longs to enter then.
The Duke of Norfolk, sprightfully and bold, stays but the summons of the appellant's trumpet.
Why, then, the champions are prepared and stay for nothing but his majesty's approach.
The trumpets sound. The king enters with his nobles, gaunt, bushy, Bagot, Green, and others. When they are set, enter Mowbray, the Duke of Norfolk, in arms, defendant, with a herald. Marshal, demand of yonder champion the cause of his arrival here in arms. Ask him his name, and orderly proceed to swear him in the justice of his cause.
In God's name and the king's. Say, who that... Actually, I gotta change his voice a little here, because he's a marshal. Sure. Just so people won't be confused.
Exactly.
In God's name and the king, say who thou art, and why thou comest thus, knightly clad in arms, against what man thou comest, and what's thy quarrel? Speak truly on thy knighthood and thy oath, and so defend thee heaven and thy valor.
My name is Thomas Mowbray, Duke of Norfolk, who hither hath come engaged by my oath, which God defend a knight should violate, both to defend my loyalty and truth to God, my king, and my succeeding issue against the Duke of Hereford that appeals me, and by the grace of God and this mine arm, to prove him, in defending of myself, a traitor to my God, my king, and me. And as I truly fight, defend me, heaven.
The trumpets. Enter Bolingbroke, Duke of Hereford, appellant, in armor, with a herald.
Marshal, ask yonder knight in arms both who he is and why he cometh hither, thus plated in habiliments of war, and formally, according to our law, dispose him in the justice of his cause.
What is thy name, and wherefore comest thou hither before King Richard in his royal list? Against whom comest thou, and what's thy quarrel? Speak like a true knight, so defend thee heaven. Harry of Hereford, Lancaster, and Derby, am I, who ready here do stand in arms to prove, by God's grace and my body's valor, it list in Thomas Mowbray, Duke of Norfolk, that he is a traitor, foul and dangerous, to God of heaven, King Richard, and to me as I truly fight, defend me heaven. On pain of death, no person be so bold or daring hardy as to touch the lists, except the marshal and such officers appointed to direct these fair designs. It's the rules. I just play by the rules. Lord Marshal, let me kiss my sovereign's hand and bow my knee before his majesty. For Mowbray and myself are like two men that vow a long and weary pilgrimage. Then let us take a ceremonious leave and loving farewell of our several friends. The appellant in all duty greets your highness and crave to kiss your hand and take his leave.
We will descend. Enfold in our arms, cousin Hereford, as thy cause is right. So be thy fortune in this royal fight. But he's not playing favorites, though.
No, yeah.
Farewell, my blood, which if today thou shed lament we may, but not revenge thee dead.
Oh, let no noble eye profane a tear for me. If I be gored with Mowbray's spear, as confident as is the falcon's flight, against a bird do I with Mowbray fight. My loving bird, lord, not bird, take my leave of you. Of you, my noble cousin, Lord Almer, not sick, although I have to do with death, but lusty young and cheerily drawing breath, low as at English feast, so I regret the daintest last to make the end most sweet. O thou, the earthly author of my blood, whose youthful spirit in me regenerate, doth with a twofold vigor lift me up to reach at victory above my head. Add proof unto mine armor with thy prayers, and with thy blessing steel my lance's point, that it may enter Mowbray's waxen coat, and furbish new the name of John Agaunt, even in the lusty havior of his son.
God, in thy good cause, make thee prosperous. Be swift like lightning in the execution, and let thy blows, doubly redoubled, fall like amazing thunder on the casque of thy adverse, pernicious enemy. Rouse up thy youthful blood, be valiant, and live!
Thanks, Dad. Mine innocence, and St. George to thrive.
However God or fortune cast my lot, there lives or dies, true to King Richard's throne, a loyal, just, and upright gentleman. Never did captive with a freer heart cast off his chains of bondage and embrace his golden uncontrolled enfranchisement, more than my dancing soul does celebrate this feast of battle with mine adversary. Most mighty liege, and my companion peers, take from my mouth the wish of happy years. As gentle and as jocund as to jest, go I to fight. Truth hath a quiet breast.
Mm. Farewell, my lord. Securely I spy virtue with valor couched in thine eye, but I don't believe you. Mm. Order the trial, Marshal, and begin.
Harry of Hereford, Lancaster, and Derby, receive thy lance, and God defend the right. Strong as tower in hope, I cry amen.
To an officer.
Go bear this lance to Thomas, Duke of Norfolk.
Harry of Hereford, Lancaster, and Derby, stand here for God, his sovereign and himself, on pain to be found false and recreant, to prove the Duke of Norfolk, Thomas Mowbray, a traitor to his God, his king, and him, and dares him to set forward to the fight.
Here standeth Thomas Mowbray, Duke of Norfolk, on pain to be found false and recreant, both to defend himself and to approve Henry of Hereford, Lancaster, and Derby, to God his sovereign and to him disloyal, courageously and with a free desire attending, but with the signal to begin.
Sound trumpets and set forward combatants! Stay! The king hath thrown his warder down!
Let them lay by their helmets and their spears, and both return back to their chairs again. Withdraw with us, and let the trumpets sound where we return these dukes what we decree. Dear, draw near, and list what with our council we have done.
That's nice.
For that our kingdom's earth should not be soiled with that dear blood which it fostered. For our eyes do hate the dire aspect of civil wounds plowed up with neighbor's swords. For we think the eagle-winged pride of sky-aspiring and ambitious thoughts with rival-hating envy set on you to wake our peace, which in our country's cradle draws the sweet infant breath of gentle sleep, which so roused up with boisterous untuned drums, with harsh resounding trumpets, dreadful bray, and grating shock of wrathful iron arms might from our quiet confines fright fair peace, and make us wade even in our kindred's blood. Therefore, we banish you our territories, you, cousin Hereford, upon pain of life twice, till twice 5 summers have enriched our fields, shall not regreet our fair dominions, but tread the stranger path of banishment.
Your will be done. This must my comfort be, that sun that warms you here shall shine on me, and those golden beams to you here lent shall point on me and gild my banishment.
Norfolk, for thee remains a heavier doom, because we're biased, which I with same unwillingness pronounce. The sly, slow hour shall not determinate the dateless limit of thy dear exile. The hopeless word of never to return breathe I against thee upon pain of life.
A heavy sentence, my most sovereign liege, and all unlooked for from your highness's mouth. A dearer merit, not so deep a main, as to be cast forth in the common air, have I deserved at your highness's hands. The language I have learnt these 40 years, my native English, now I must forego, and now my tongue's use is to me no more than an unstringed viol or a harp, or like a cunning instrument cased up or being open put into his hands that knows no touch to tune the harmony. Within my mouth you have enjailed my tongue, doubly portcullised with my teeth and lips, and dull, unfeeling, barren ignorance is made my jailer to attend on me. I am too old to fawn upon a nurse, too far in years to be a pupil now. What is thy sentence then but speechless death, which robs my tongue from breathing native breath?
It boots thee not to be compassionate, after our sentence plaining comes too late.
Then thus I turn me from my country's light, to dwell in solemn shades of endless night.
Return again, and take an oath with thee. Lay on our royal sword your banished hand. Swear by the duty that owed to God, our part therein we banish with ourselves, to keep the oath that we administer. You never shall, so help you truth and God, embrace each other's love and banishment, nor never look upon each other's face, nor never write, regreet, nor reconcile this lowering tempest of your home-bred hate. Nor never by advised purpose meet to plot, contrive, or complot any ill against us, our state, our subjects, and our land.
I swear.
And I, to keep all this.
Norfolk, so fair as to mine enemy, by this time had the king permitted us, One of our souls had wandered in the air, banished this frail sepulchre of our flesh, and now our flesh is banished from this land. Confess thy treasons ere thou fly the realm. Since thou hast far to go, bear not along the clogging burden of a guilty soul. Mm-hmm. Tell it!
No, Bolingbroke. If ever I were a traitor, my name be blotted from the book of life, and I from heaven banished as from hence.
Well,
but what thou maybe. Art, God, thou and I do know, and all too soon I fear the king shall rue. Farewell, my liege. Now no way can I stray, save back to England. All the world's my way.
Exit.
He that's actually, my son that's just talking right now.
Yeah, but he also comes back in Richard the, in Henry VI.
He
the
does.
Sixth. He's the
old.
Just saying, yeah. John of Gaunt's son.
Played by
not
Jay
played.
Reed, by the
player,
way.
Player, but not played.
Jay Reed in Henry the Sixth, Part One.
Uncle, even in the glasses of thine eyes I see thy grieved heart. Thy sad aspect hath from the number of his banished years plucked four away.
To Bolingbroke.
6 frozen winters span, not 10, because, you know, return with welcome home from banishment.
How long a time lies in one little word, 4 lagging winters and 4 wanton springs end in a word, such is the breath of kings.
I thank my liege that in regard of me he shortens 4 years of my son's exile, but little vantage shall I reap thereby. For ere the 6 years that he hath to spend can change their moons and bring their times about, my oil-dried lamp with time-bewasted light shall be extinct with age and endless night. My inch of taper will be burnt and done, and blindfold death will not let me see my son.
But, uncle, thou hast many years to live.
But not a minute, king. That thou canst give. Short my days thou canst with sullen sorrow, and pluck nights for me, but not lend to morrow. Thou canst help time to furrow me with age, but not stop no wrinkle in this pilgrimage. Thy word is current with him for my death, but dead thy kingdom cannot buy my breath.
Thy son is banished upon good advice, whereto thy tongue a party verdict gave. Why at our justice seemest thou then to lour?
Things sweet to taste prove in digestion sour. You urge me as a judge, but I had rather you would have bid me argue as a father. Oh, had it been a stranger, not my child, to smooth his fault, I should have been more mild. A partial slander sought I to avoid, and in the sentence my own life destroyed. Alas, I looked when some of you should say I was too strict to make mine own away, but you gave leave to my unwilling tongue against my will to do myself this wrong.
Okay, cousin, farewell, an uncle bid him so. 6 years we banish him, and he shall go.
Flourish. Exit with his train.
Cousin, farewell. Must presence must not now. From where you do maintain or remain, let paper show.
My lord, no leave take I, for I will ride as far as land will let me by your side.
Oh, to what purpose dost thou hoard thy words, that thou return'st no greeting to thy friends?
I have too few to take my leave of you, when the tongue's office should be prodigal to breathe the abundant dolour of the heart.
Thy grief is but thy absence for a time.
Joy absent, grief is present for that time.
What is 6 winters? They are quickly gone.
To men enjoy, but grief makes 1 hour
call
10.
Call it travel, that thou takes for pleasure.
My heart will sigh when I miscall it so, which finds it an enforced pilgrimage.
The sullen passage of thy weary steps, esteem as foil wherein thou art to set. The precious jewel of thy home, return.
Nay, rather, every tedious stride I make will but remember me what a deal of world. I wander from the jewels that I love. Must I not serve a long apprenticehood to foreign passages, and in the end, having my freedom, boast of nothing else but that I was a journeyman to grief.
All places that the eye of heaven visits are to a wise man ports and happy havens. Teach thy necessity to reason thus,
There is no virtue like necessity. Think not the king did banish thee, but thou the king. Woe doth the heavier sit when it perceives it is but faintly born. Go, say I sent thee forth to purchase honor, and not the king exiled thee, or suppose devouring pestilence hangs in the air, and thou art flying to a fresher clime. Look, what thy soul holds dear, imagine it to lie that way thou goest, not whence thou comest. Suppose the singing birds, musicians, the grass whereon thou treads, the presence...
The Disney movie.
Strewed. The flowers, fair ladies, and thy steps no more than a delightful measure or a dance. For gnarling sorrow has less power to hate the man that mocks it as sets it at light.
Oh, who can hold a fire in his hand by thinking on the frosty Caucasus?
Caucasus? True enough.
Whoa. Struck a chord there.
Or cloy the hungry edge of appetite by bare imagining of a feast. Or wallow naked in December snow by thinking on fantastic summer's heat. Oh no, the apprehension of the good gives but the greater feeling to the worse. Fell sorrow's tooth doth never rankle more than when he bites, but lanceth not the sore.
Come, come, my son. I'll bring thee on the... Fray? Way?
On thy way.
Wait. On thy way? Sorry, my book is messed up. Had I thy youth and cause, I would not stay.
Then England's ground, farewell. Sweet soil, adieu. My mother and my nurse that bears me yet. Where'er I wander, boast of this I can. Thou banished yet a true-born Englishman.
Exunt. Doesn't sound English.
Exunt.
Anyway, banishment... Again, another theme.
Like you need to be Baggots and Green.
Well,
at least the two. You have to do two different voices for both of them.
Fair enough. We haven't even introduced our newest brawler.
Hey, Troy.
First time brawler Troy Clements is here on the podcast at long last. We had a few swaps, trades. We had to give away some prospects. Bunch of cash and a bunch of backroom deals.
Here I am. Here
Troy Clement is in, and he will be reading Green. And Stephanie, if you could read Bushy. We're in the,
all the cool
the
kids
court.
King Richard.
Here.
Oh, okay.
King Richard, Green, Baggett. Enter the king with Green and Baggett at one door and the Lord of Merle at another.
We did observe. Cool. Cousin
okay.
O'Mell.
What? Sorry, I just want to make sure who I am.
You are Green.
Green. Lord Green.
Lord Green. You're a lord.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We did observe. Cousin O'Mell, how far brought you High Hereford on his way?
I brought him, Hereford, if you call him so, but to the next highway, and there I left him.
And say, what store of parting tears were shed?
Faith, none of me, except the northeast wind, which then blew bitterly against our faces, awakened the sleeping room, and so by chance did grace our hollow parting with a tear.
Very manly. Mm. What said our cousin when you parted with him?
Farewell. And for my heart disdainful that my tongue should so profane the word that taught me craft to counterfeit opposition of such grief, that word seemed buried in my sorrow's grave. Marry, with the word farewell, have lengthened hours and added years to his short banishment. He should have had a volume of farewells, but since it would not, he had none of me.
He is our cousin's cousin, but 'tis doubt, when time should call him home from banishment, whether our kinsmen come to see his friends. Ourself and Bushy, Baggett here and Green, observed his courtship to the common people. How he did seem to dive into their hearts with humble and familiar courtesy. With reverence he did throw away on slaves, wooing poor craftsmen with the craft of smiles and patient underbearings of his fortune, as 'twere to banish their affects with him. Off goes his bonnet to an oyster wench. A brace of draymen bid God speed him well, and had the tribute of his supple knee with
Thanks, my countrymen, my loving friends, as were our England in reversion his, and he, our subject's next degree in hope.
Well, he is gone, and with him go these thoughts. Now for the rebels which stand out in Ireland, expedient manage must be made, my liege. Ere further leisure yield them further means for their advantage and your Highlands' loss.
We will ourself in person to this war, and for our coffers with too great a court and liberal largess are grown somewhat light, we are enforced to farm our royal realm. The revenue whereof shall furnish us for our affairs in hand. I'm sure the lack of money has nothing to do with all those dancers I hire. If that comes short, our substitutes at home shall have our blank charters, whereto, when they shall know what men are rich, they shall subscribe them for large sums of gold and send them after to supply our wants, for we will make for Ireland presently.
Enter Bushy.
Bushy, rich, what news? Rich,
Old John of Gaunt is grievous sick, my lord, suddenly taken, and has sent post-haste to entreat your majesty to visit him.
Where lies he?
At Ely House.
Ely. Mm.
Ely House.
I thought it was Ely.
No, it's Ely.
But it's Ely.
If you live there, it's Ely.
Oh.
All
right, Ely.
Ely. Okay. Everybody says it.
All right, I will go to Ely House. Now put it, God, in the physician's mind, to help him to his grave immediately. The lining of his coffers shall make coats to deck our soldiers for these Irish wars. Come, gentlemen, let us go visit him. Pray God we may make haste and come too late.
Amen. Excellent. And that is not going to cause any problems. We banish someone and take all his land.
We take John of Gaunt's land.
He's not using it.
Who cares if I mismanage my royal funds? You guys have plenty of money I can steal.
So early plays like this one, he rhymes.
But he doesn't rhyme all the time.
Not all the time, but...
Yeah. But there is more rhyminess than in later plays. Also, the theme is constantly, if you are away from the throne, you've lost. It's worse than death.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's That's continually just what Jesus Shakespeare.
And Wolf Hollowed, you know, how, like, anybody that was exiled from Henry VIII's throne suddenly, like, just simply died. Like, they couldn't handle being out of the presence of the king when they had been... raised in that presence. She said they just...
Royal ninjas.
Yeah,
they
just couldn't handle it. Like, as the further you were away from court and...
Well, that's what Bolingbroke just said. Like, yeah. Basically, like... What,
it's like a death
not,
to be away
six,
from court.
6 years.
Know?
Like, what?
But it's because it's a social death.
Yeah.
If you're not in court, you're not at court. And if you're not at court, you're nobody.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
He may as well be dead.
Bolingbroke may as well be dead. And with that, we end Act 1. Thank you to the Bard Brawlers who showed up for this Act 1 of King Richard II. Join us again when we will see what happens to brave King Richard.
Nice trumpet flourish.
That was nice.
Ready?
A lot of trumpet flourishes.
No, let's have another one. Ready?
You'll get...
You
I don't think
chance.
It's
you
in
have a chance. That's funny.
There's lots of stage directions. I don't think there's a stage direction.
Do
okay, go ahead.
More.
Go one more.
No, there
has that
to be a
wasn't
better,
very
like,
trumpety. Oof. Jeez. Well, that was really
It only works
that
in concert.
Worth.
It only
yeah,
works
yeah,
in concert.
It, all together.
It was worth it.
The acoustics in here aren't great. So admit.
It's a room. Thank you, everybody. We will be back. Go to barbrawl.com for any of the other plays we've spoken about. Find us on Twitter and follow us, Facebook, like us, everything else, all else in between. Check out a lot of the summer productions of Shakespeare that are coming up. I haven't seen a Richard II, but if anybody out there has, feel free to let me know.
And I'm not wearing my jersey. I feel like I've cursed the team. So really, it's no more ridiculous.
So thank you for joining the Bard Brawl. We'll come back and talk with you again.
See you next time.
And now the Bard Brawl presents Sonnet 37 as read by Andre Simono.
As a decrepit father takes delight to see his active child do deeds of youth, so I, made lame by fortune's dearest spite, take all my comfort of thy worth and truth. For whether beauty, birth, or wealth, or wit, or any of these all, or more, entitled in thy parts to crowned sit, I make my love engrafted to this store. So then I am not lame, poor nor despised, whilst that this shadow doth such substance give, that I in thy abundance am sufficed, and by a part of all thy glory live. Look, what is best, that best I wish in thee. This wish I have, then 10 times happy me.